Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona. Now I want to thank all of you for tuning in this evening, and you can thank yourself for what you're about to learn. Tonight is Thursday, the 25th of February, 2010. Now for the cursory information, if you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, or HOT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com, that's hourofthetime.com. The studio number in Arizona, 928-333-2942, 928-333-2942, and in Canada, 613-733-4324. Again, in Canada, 613-733-4324. Now, my personal email address, if you'd like to offer suggestions for broadcasting, share research, correspond just in general, have some inquiries, or send hate mail, it is hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that the Hour of the Time is listener-supported, and through your donations, either outright or better yet, donations for research materials, that is how Hour of the Time maintains our presence and expands. We need to expand even more, and we have some really good offers right now, and we should do it, but we can't without your support. Go to the website, thehourofthetime.com. And then go to the Hot Shop. There you can donate for individual MP3s, MP3 bundles that are in series form. There are topically interest categories. There you can get MP3 packages like the ADL, Mystery Babylon 1, 2, or 3, the Survival Series, Zionist Violations, or even this newest series that we're doing right now, The Israel Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy. There's several DVD productions available, ranging from in-house to guest appearances from our conferences. Behold a Pale Horse, The Three Wise Men by John Daniels, Emergency First Aid by myself, all the main categories taught step-by-step on video that the military uses for all of their emergency first aid classes to personnel. So go look there, ladies and gentlemen, and think about lending your hand and support. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, for people across this country to get off their duff and to get involved, because what we need is a restoration of our republic. A restoration of our Constitution and Republican form of government. And we can't do that with just a handful of people. It will be a small percentage of the population, of course, that gets all the work done, but it still takes bodies, minds, educated minds that know facts and discernment from rhetoric and just in general bullshit that's generally broadcast out there and passed around the internet world. So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. Now, again, if you'd like to email me personally, it really is the best route because when I'm gone on speaking engagements, which is a lot, and it's going to be a lot more here very soon, just as the weather changes and the time of year and events around the country, the email, at least, I can check in on a fairly regular basis, no matter where I'm at. Messages to the studio may sit for a week or more or less, and the phone machine always is like any other recording device, not always perfect, especially if the person leaving the message is very quick in their talk, doesn't leave a phone number at the end of the message. That's quite common, actually. You'd be amazed. Or gives me their whole biography and forgets to get to the point. So an email is really good. Again, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, we're going to be doing several new releases here shortly of audio and video. So you need to keep in tune, if you will, to the website. Those announcements would all be on the front page of the website. hourofthetime.com. There it is going to encompass not only some new audio and video releases, but of course our ongoing articles from various contributing authors out there to the Veritas News Service and research pieces from other venues as well. Now again, tonight after this musical break, as normal, this is your time to get prepared for the rest of the hour to take notes. Tonight again, part 6 in our series on the Israel lobby and U.S. foreign policy, Thursday the 25th of February 2010. right, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Hour of the Time here with your host, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, Thursday, the 25th of February, 2010, with part 6 in our ongoing series, The Israel Lobby in U.S. Foreign Policy. Now, this is the finale in the broadcast series, if you will, and we have a special offer available this evening and this evening only. If you email during this broadcast while it's new and live, Thursday, the 25th of February, 2010, I will send you the massive, that's the only way to describe it, bibliography that this series was taken from. Now, the contextual work was taken from a report written by two professors. Got it about 4 years ago, and I saw how accurate it was after, whenever I'd have time, looking up some of the sources and reading them, and then looking up more and more and more and more, and then seeing the events unfurl more and more and more. These two professors are to be commended for their work. It's Professors Mearsheimer from the University of Chicago and Mr. Professor, that is, Walt, John F. Kennedy School of Government, Harvard University. And they wrote this piece in the contextual part, the textual part, that is, that's written to explain this and that point of view or to tell the story in general, is actually smaller than the bibliography. So, if you email tonight, I'll send you that entire bibliography in a Word document. I have combed through it and combed through it. It is absolutely wonderful, and it's from the professors. It's their bibliography that they used for this work. When they published this paper, it was immediately suppressed, of course. It was reviewed in the London Review of Books, and got a good review, actually, from several peers. And, of course, there were hecklers out there as well, but that's going to be with anything. You could write a piece on how the earth was round, and someone would argue with you. So, that's to be expected. But, this bibliography will give you hundreds, if not thousands, of hours of reading enjoyment and research. About 43 pages long when they published it. Now, I reformatted it just to save a few pages for printing it out because I handed it out at a speaking engagement. And when I say reformatted, nothing's removed. I just made the margins wider. So eventually, over the course of such a huge document, I saved a few pages. And then, of course, took the master set and had it double-sided when I had copies made. So that saved quite a bit on bulk and price. But you email me tonight, Thursday the 25th of February, 2010, why this show is new and live, and I will email that to you for free. That's kind of a thank you for tuning in and doing your research and your share and being proactive in this fight for truthful research, understanding, and a restoration. Now, to briefly recap, or go back to just the end where we left off in part 5 in this series, we were talking about how Syria was raked over the coals through Israel lobby, gunning for them, and that's an appropriate title, gunning for Syria, through what they called even dreams of regional transformation. And, of course, they used their massive lobby power, as we've documented over the past few series, in fact, to accomplish this. Now, Syria, when they came in, there was, during the Bush administration, Bush Jr., where we left off, there was some, you know, ambivalence and not really a consensus on targeting Syria at the beginning of the administration. But the lobby, as we call it, won out. And there were a few reasons here, and we'll recap those. First, the Syrian government had been providing the United States with important intelligence information about the Middle East region ever since 9/11 happened, and had even warned Washington about planned terrorist attacks in the Gulf region. Syria had given CIA interrogators access to Zamar, the alleged recruiter to some of the 9/11 hijackers. And then targeting the Assad regime, that is, the elect leader of Syria, would jeopardize all of these valuable connections and could thus undermine a larger tactical or strategic move in the Middle East. Secondly, Syria was not really on bad terms with Washington before the Iraq War, and it had even voted for that UN resolution, 1441. Go look it up. We've covered it already on the broadcast. And Syria was no threat and is no threat to the United States. In fact, playing hardball with Syria would make the United States look like a bully, with an insatiable appetite, in fact, for beating up Arab states. Finally, putting Syria on the American hit list would give Damascus a powerful incentive to cause trouble in Iraq. So, even if one did want to pressure Syria, it made good sense to many people in the early years of the Bush administration to finish the job in Iraq first. Yet, guess what? Congress insisted on putting the screws to Damascus, largely in response to pressure from Israel officials and pro-Israel groups like AIPAC. If there were no lobby, there would have been no Syria Accountability Act, and U.S. policy towards Damascus would have been more in line with actual U.S. national interest. See, again, the lobby steered U.S. foreign policy away from what was actually in our best interest, serving their interest only. Now, as I said, we would, in this part six in the series, get into the Iran affairs. Israelis tend to describe every threat in the starkest terms, but Iran is widely seen as their most dangerous enemy because it is the most likely adversary to acquire nuclear weapons. Virtually all Israelis regard an Islamic country in the Middle East with nuclear weapons as an existential threat. As Israeli Defense Minister Eliezer remarked 1 month before the Iraq War, quote, "Iraq is a problem, but you should understand, if you ask me, today Iran is more dangerous than Iraq," end quote. This is the conditioning, the softening up, starting early, as we've proven time and time again, towards other countries. Sharon, or Sharon as I like calling him, began publicly pushing the United States to confront Iran in November 2002. Excuse me. And in fact, in a high-profile interview in The Times, London, they described Iran as the center of world terror and bent on acquiring nuclear weapons. Sharon declared that the Bush administration should put the strong arm on Iran the day after it conquered Iraq. Then, in late April 2003, Haaretz reported that the Israeli ambassador in Washington was now calling for regime change in Iran. The overthrow of Saddam, he noted, was not enough. In other words, America, quote, has to follow through. We still have great threats of that magnitude coming from Syria, coming from Iran, end quote. And the neoconservatives also lost no time in making the case for regime change in Tehran. on May 6th, the AEI co-sponsored an all-day conference on Iran with the pro-Israel Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, that is, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, and the Hudson Institute. Go look them up, ladies and gentlemen. These speakers were all strongly pro-Israel, and many called for the United States to replace the Iranian regime with a so-called democracy. As usual, there was a bevy of articles by prominent neoconservatives making the case for going after Iran. And again, you'll see the same names pop up over and over, ladies and gentlemen, as was the case with Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, etc. For example, William Kristol, again, wrote in the Weekly Standard on May 12th that, quote, the liberation of Iraq was the first great battle for the future of the Middle East. But the next great battle, not, we hope, a military one, will be for Iran, end quote. Now, the Bush administration responded to the lobby's pressure by working overtime to shut down Iran's nuclear program. But Washington has had little success, and Iran seems determined to get a nuclear program going. As a result, the lobby has intensified its pressure on the U.S. government, using all the strategies in its playbook. Op-eds and articles now warn of imminent dangers from a nuclear Iran, caution against any appeasement of a quote-unquote terrorist regime, and hint darkly of preventative action should diplomacy fail. The lobby also is pushing Congress to approve Iran Freedom Support Acts, which would expand existing sanctions on Iran. Israeli officials also warn they may take preemptive action should Iran continue down the nuclear road, hence partly intended to keep Washington focused on the issue. Now, ladies and gentlemen, think about that. We have proven time and time again here on Hour of the Time, as has millions of researchers, or I should say hundreds of researchers out there, Israel has a full nuclear program. They can't hide it. Now, if you were sitting over there, I'm not saying I'm an Iranian ally, but if you were sitting over there in some other country in that very convoluted and closely packed region, and you saw on a daily basis the Israel lobby and its power in swaying, if you will, and persuading the U.S. government's foreign policy, behavior, and actions, and you knew that this same lobby had a nuclear arsenal of its own, I think you would think about getting your own nuclear system set up as well. Now, can all that go anywhere? Is it going to do any good in the big picture? No. But think if you were on the ground, ladies and gentlemen, building your own nuclear arsenal would be the obvious answer. If nothing else, as a very expensive deterrent. Because hopefully then the other guy, the only one in that region to have them, would at least be not so quick to use it. Now, one might argue that Israel and the lobby have not had much influence on U.S. policies towards Iran, because the United States has its own reasons to keep Iran from going nuclear. This is partly true, but Iran's nuclear ambitions do not pose an existential threat to the United States. If Washington could live with a nuclear Soviet Union, a nuclear China, a nuclear North Korea, then it can live, guess what, with a nuclear Iran and a nuclear Israel. And that is why the lobby must keep constant pressure on U.S. politicians to confront Tehran. Iran and the United States would hardly be allies if the lobby did not exist, but U.S. policy would be more temperate and preventative war would not be a serious option. Just something to think about, ladies and gentlemen, as we see the news on and on and on in the news headlines. I read numerous news headlines at the end of the Zionist violation series to you of this propagandizing that started clear back in 2002, this latest new push, that is, by the lobby to get the U.S. directly involved with the strike against Iran next. So as you see these events unfolding, you have some background, especially if you were listening and took heed of the offer, and you email me tonight, the 25th of February, Thursday, 2010, why this program is new and live, and request that bibliography I offered. Hundreds and if not thousands of hours of reading and research material for you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's something to think about as you see these events unfold. As you see, and people are becoming desensitized, and that's on purpose, ladies and gentlemen, but people are becoming desensitized to the attacks and the body count in the Middle East as we go on pushing 10 years over there nonstop in war. People pay less and less attention to the U.S. or the foreign body count. It's not such a big thing on the news anymore. It's just a number now, a passing by commentary by the occasional talking head or editorial writer. And that's unfortunate, because it's turned into quite the quagmire. So as this body count increases and increases of Americans and others, think about how this lobby affects U.S. foreign policy away from oftentimes what's really in our best national interest. And where does it lead us oftentimes? To unhindered spending on the military, and it's disposable spending. You can't recoup transportation costs for troops. There's no way to do that. You can't recoup spent armament, materials, food, first aid, bullets. None of that can ever be recouped, because you can't look at it as a long-term investment either, because it's not in the best interest of U.S. national and foreign policy. So in the long term and short term, it's just a loss outright, much like how our economy is ran out of the Beltway. So these are all things to think about, ladies and gentlemen. That's why the push for these recent series is here on Hour of the Time, because you will see staggering events unfold in this 2010 and 2011, because we are in for a rough ride internationally and nationally. And that is why you need, ladies and gentlemen, to get behind the Hour of the Time. You need to wake up, and not just wake up as is bannered all over the internet and bullshit talk shows and chat rooms and email and fax alerts, fax just in. Waking up isn't nothing. Let's compare it to the average welfare derelict. They wake up some point during the day, and many of them, well, after they lounge around for a large part of the day, might eventually get dressed and comb their hair even. And they might rummage around and get a few basic, what they feel are supplies, maybe a pack of smokes, whatever, some candy, maybe a new Walmart Disney DVD to shove in the DVD player to babysit the children that you're paying for. And then the end of the day comes around and they watch that great eye, the TV, that tells them how to think, and then they go to bed, having accomplished very little at all, only to wake up again the next day and do it all over again. So the waking up thing I keep hearing about is nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't get you anywhere. You need to take action. Even action on a microcosm scale is very effective. Remember, it starts with you and the family and at the local level. And what do I mean? Well, I've stressed that for years. Hour of the Time teaches that on the air, our conferences, our speaking engagements, etc. If you and your family are very self-sufficient, whether that be because of food storage, knowledge, ammunition, first aid supplies, proactive stances in your community and neighborhoods and churches, whatever groups you might belong to, whatever it is, you are an enemy to those world socialists who would want and take control of everybody. You are a massive roadblock to them, just you, you and your little island. And you do have effect on those around you. People will notice, good and bad, but people will notice. And then it spreads to the next person. Maybe it's in your local church. Maybe it's your neighbor. Maybe it's a coworker. Maybe you just are fishing and hunting, or maybe it's a casual conversation in the line at the shopping market. But you will have an influence. And when you stand up and hold your ground at the local little city council or county meeting and state factual views, you have put another wedge in their gears, their mechanizations. And then you affect even more. And then soon there's a few of you that are islands of self-sufficiency. And why you're really dangerous to those communist and socialist scum that would have you under total control is because you're autonomous, basically. They can tinker with oil supplies. So maybe you've got a little solar. You don't have to have a full solar rig. Maybe just start out with a basic small backup for some basic lights and rudimentary cooking and water heating, etc. And some communications. You can't just be shut down and bullied and pushed into line to the next camp or the next vaccination line or the next food line or evacuation line. You can't just be assimilated and processed like cattle. Because you are self-sufficient. You can think. And that is what we need, ladies and gentlemen out there, are thinkers, proactive thinkers, not just people who've woke up. So that is my commentary, because I've been hearing about that a lot and being asked a lot as I've turned down guest appearances on broadcast and with different hosts and even written formats lately, only because that they've already got the interview pre-done in their head, and they're wanting me to fill in the blanks. So it's not really an interview, it's bullshit, is what it is. And they're cowards and scumbags in my mind. If they're pushy, I'll start naming who they are on the air, but I'll be nice for now. But several of them that have wanted interviews with me lately, they have an agenda already made up in their mind, and how an interview or a presentation's going to go, and they just want me to increase their numbers and to fill in the facts because they're too lazy to do their own research. But they want it already geared towards a certain direction. So I will not partake in that. They can go pound sand. And see, ladies and gentlemen, that's a big problem because many of these same people keep telling me, well, millions of people are waking up. Millions of people are waking up. So that's why I gave you my little allegory and thoughts on waking up. It can be compared just as much to the typical welfare derelict that you might despise in your community that is quite able-bodied and has a mind and could do something, and chooses to do nothing but live on the government dole and be a slave. So the millions, as it's been told to me a lot lately, of people waking up is really getting us nowhere and has gotten us nowhere. Proactive thinking and self-sufficiency is what we need, ladies and gentlemen. That's the real threat when you can stand on your own to enemies of freedom. Ladies and gentlemen, again, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. The website, hourofthetime.com. The studio in Arizona, phone number 928-333-2942. The studio number in Canada, 613-733-4324. And my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to wrap up this finale, this series, this part six this evening in the Israel lobby and U.S. foreign policy, with the conclusion written by the professors of this report. Can the lobby's power be curtailed? One would like to think so, given the Iraq debacle, the obvious need to rebuild America's image in the Arab and Islamic world, and the recent revelations about AIPAC officials passing U.S. government secrets to Israel. One might also think that Arafat's death and the election of a more moderate Mazen, that's Abu Mazen, would cause Washington to press more vigorously and even-handedly for a peace agreement. In short, there are ample grounds for U.S. leaders to distance themselves from the lobby and adopt a Mideast policy more consistent with broader U.S. interests. In particular, using American power to achieve a just peace between Israel and the Palestinians would help advance the broader goals of fighting extremism and promoting democracy, as they call it, in the Middle East. But that is not going to happen anytime soon. AIPAC and its allies, including Christian Zionists, have no serious opponents in the lobbying world. They know it has become more difficult to make Israel's case today, and they are responding by expanding their activities and staffs. Moreover, American politicians remain acutely sensitive to campaign contributions and other forms of political pressure, and major media outlets are likely to remain sympathetic to Israel no matter what it does. This situation, ladies and gentlemen, is deeply worrisome because the lobby's influence causes trouble on several fronts. It increases the terrorist danger that all states face, including America's European allies. By preventing U.S. leaders from pressuring Israel to make peace, the lobby has also made it impossible to end the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And that was heavily documented as an aside here, ladies and gentlemen, in the Zionist Violation series, over 50 years of historical data given out on the air in a series of broadcasts recently finished. Go to the Hot Shop via our website, hourofthetime.com, and look for that bundled package or individual broadcast if you want a whole assortment in MP3 format. Look at the ADL series, ladies and gentlemen. Look at Mystery Babylon series. And once your history is worked out more through research, then you can get onto the real actions that are solutions. Then look onto the Minuteman, tactics, psyops, survival. Then look to those series. Now, back to the piece. This situation gives extremists a powerful recruiting tool, increases the pool of potential terrorists and sympathizers, and contributes, actually, to Islamic radicalism around the world. Furthermore, the lobby's campaign for regime change in Iran and Syria will probably lead the United States to attack those countries, with more than likely disastrous effects. We do not need another Iraq. At a minimum, the lobby's hostility towards these countries makes it especially difficult for Washington to enlist them against Al-Qaeda and the Iraqi insurgency, where their help is badly needed. And the authors go on to state and talk about a moral dimension. They say there's a moral dimension here as well. And thanks to the lobby, the United States has become the de facto enabler of Israeli expansion in the occupied territories, making it complicit in the crimes perpetrated against the Palestinians. And that is absolutely correct. See, this situation undercuts Washington's efforts to promote so-called democracy abroad and makes it look hypocritical when it presses other states to respect human rights. U.S. efforts to limit nuclear proliferation appear equally hypocritical given its willingness to accept Israel's nuclear arsenal, which, of course, encourages Iran and others to seek similar capabilities. Moreover, the lobbies campaign to squelch debate about Israel is unhealthy for freedom. silencing skeptics by organizing blacklists and boycotts, or by suggesting that critics are anti-Semites, violates the very principles of open debate upon which freedom depends. The inability of the U.S. Congress to conduct a genuine debate on these vital issues paralyzes the entire process of deliberation. Israel's backers should be free to make their case and to challenge those who disagree with them. And that's a fact, ladies and gentlemen. And I'll repeat that. Israel's backers should be free to make their case and challenge those who disagree with them. But efforts to stifle debate by intimidation must be roundly condemned by those who believe in free speech and open discussion of important public issues. Finally, the lobby's influence has been bad for Israel. Its ability to persuade Washington to support an expansionist agenda has discouraged Israel from seizing opportunities, including a peace treaty with Syria and a prompt and full implementation of the Oslo Accords that would have saved Israeli lives and shrunk the ranks of Palestinian extremists. Denying the Palestinians their legitimate political rights certainly has not made Israel more secure. And the long campaign to kill or marginalize an entire generation of Palestinian leaders has empowered groups like Hamas and reduced the number of Palestinian leaders who would be both willing to accept fair settlement and able to make it work. This course, of course, that's odd. This course, of course, a horse is a horse. Anyway, raises the awful specter of Israel one day occupying the pariah status once reserved for apartheid states like South Africa. Ironically, Israel itself would probably be better off if the lobby were less powerful and U.S. policy were more even-handed. But there is some hope. Although the lobby remains a powerful force, the adverse effects of its influence are increasingly difficult to hide. Powerful states can maintain flawed policies for quite some time, but reality cannot be ignored forever, and will catch up with you. Look at our economy. What is needed, therefore, is a candid discussion of the lobby's influence and a more open debate about U.S. interest in that vital region. Israel's well-being is one of those interests, but not its continued occupation of the West Bank or its broader regional agenda. Open debate would expose the limits of the strategic and moral case for one-sided U.S. support and could move the United States to a position more consistent with its own national interest with the interests of other states in the region and with Israel's long-term interests as well. All right, ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. The website, hourofthetime.com. The studio in Arizona, 928-333-2942. In Canada, 613-733-4324. My personal email address, if you'd like to share research, inquire clearly about items of interest, hate mail, what have you, is hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And obviously, based on the emails I received, which were mostly quite ignorant, quite honestly, in the two preceding broadcasts, that would be part four and part five, actually, in this series of the Israel lobby and U.S. foreign policy. Tonight is part six and the finale. I obviously got under the skin of some people and obviously helped some people. Because actually, I try to, believe it or not, those who know me, I do actually try to look at the good more often. And although Hour of the Time, unfortunately, has to be the bringer or bearer of bad news quite often, we do get to see the good side of things too. And I got possibly more email from people thanking me for this series and several series recently, and for what Hour of the Time does in general. Because they checked it out, and they woke up, and they moved on to do something. They realized they had been deceived by several of the prominent broadcasters and networks and websites out there. And that makes us feel good. That's what we're here for. But feeling good isn't what it's all about. Action is what it's about. And I want to brag on a few recent accomplishments Hour of the Time staff and researchers have had. Many of you will remember me telling you about all the speaking engagements I constantly do and about our successful victories in the courts and hearings and appellate venues because of our jurisdictional writings that affected and helped all 50 states from the aggression of seizure of most of the lands in this country by federal agencies, most notably the Department of the Interior, fulfilling their goal of UN Agenda 21, the Wildlands Project, biosphere treaties, bioregional governance, humanless zones and buffer zones, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we're into our next round now, and just last week, after the federal mafia were all allowed 15 minutes each to speak at some hearings, and the one-sided moderator of the hearings, a scumbag, was allowing me and several other researchers only 2 minutes each, that's okay. Because in 2 minutes, fact and truth do a lot more in documentation than 15 minutes of bullshit. And in my less than 2 minutes, because when I was done, I was done. I not only called them to the carpet, but smoked them, and in fact, the federal staff people left before the meeting was even completed. In fact, after I sat down, because of questions I raised and documentations I brought up from court cases, laws, from acts of Congress assembled, not just administrative rulings, and they were queried very slightly, however, but due to the packed out-of-room seating in a massive meeting hall, people having to stand, they were called by a few conscientious people about what I had brought up. And before they left, they couldn't even answer with their head upright. I'm not exaggerating. They were looking at the ground and mumbling from a profiling or facial expression or oratory or oral viewpoint of an investigator or researcher, it was quite obvious, besides the facts, that they were lying. And now, Hour of the Time researchers and staff, ladies and gentlemen, have been appointed to represent several large counties and entities out west here, to represent entire municipalities and entire counties against the federal mafia. So don't tell me that you can't get something done, ladies and gentlemen, where you're at. This is what was termed a handful of dumb rednecks when we started. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you took studious notes, and I hope you take me up on that offer tonight, 25th, February 2010, Thursday, for that bibliography. Email me why this broadcast is new and live, and I'll send that to you for free. It will take you hundreds of hours to read it all, and I hope everyone has a safe and a studious evening.